This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, fired up and ready for another edition of The Edge here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I think we have a fantastic show on tap today. Plenty of coverage of what happened last night in the Western Conference Finals. But, of course, we'll set the table. Erin Kate Dolan joins us, as she usually does, on these hump days. And then, of course, in the second hour, a lot going on in the world of the National Football League. We have two great guests to go over every single piece of it. Eric Edholm, NFL writer for Yahoo Sports. And we're going to get a little team-specific this week. And tell you what, I have a really high opinion, and it's getting a little bit higher on this New England Patriots team. And I will say, I have been a Cam stan for a very long time. If you remember some of the shows filling in on My Guys in the Desert, Cam Newton was one guy I think I consistently went to bat for, including scoffing at Amal Shah when he had the audacity to bring up the Denver Broncos Super Bowl where he failed to dive on the fumble. This is a long way of saying I think Cam could be really good with the New England Patriots. And who better to break that down with than Bob Sosi, play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots, who's going to join us in the second hour. Plenty of coverage in between, though, for everything else. But let's start in the world of the NBA, because we had a really good game last night. The Denver Nuggets decide to go ahead and take game three from the Los Angeles Lakers, cut the series deficit to just one game. Denver, a six-point underdog, wins outright. Game goes over the total of 214.5. But once again, man, we're going to open up with this, and we'll get to the details of the game. But how can you not, when you recap a game like this, a 114-106 victory for the Nuggets, not start with a brilliant performance from Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, specifically Jamal Murray, who was absolutely unreal. 28 points, 10 of 17 from the floor, 4 of 8 from three-point range. He had 8 rebounds, 12 assists. The dagger three-point shot over Anthony Davis to seal it up for the Denver Nuggets, and actually scored or assisted on 8 consecutive points for the Nuggets to help run away from the Los Angeles Lakers, who made a furious comeback in the fourth quarter. But Murray was absolutely brilliant. The step back three over Caruso with 2:17 left, the assist to Millsap with 1:33, where Millsap gets trapped up against the baseline with 3 Lakers. He somehow gets it out to Murray. Murray with the wherewithal as he dribbles into traffic to kick it back to Millsap, who's still ball by himself underneath the basket. How about this stat from ESPN Stats and Info on the greatness of Jamal Murray? He is shooting 72.7%, 8 of 11, from three-point range in clutch time this postseason. It is the best such percentage in a single postseason in ESPN Stats and Info's data set with a minimum of 10 attempts. And, of course, clutch time being game within 5 points and less than 5 minutes to go. Murray, with his 8 clutch time three-pointers this postseason, the second most in a single postseason over the past 20 years, behind only one guy, Steph Curry, in 2016. That stat also via ESPN Stats and Info. Jamal Murray's been unreal, dude. And just, again, you know, I did this when we were talking, like, right at the end of the seeding games and going into the postseason, because at my very core, I am a basketball fan. Watching Murray, right, is just absolutely unreal, man. This is such a cool coming-out party for a young guy who slipped a 7th in the draft his year. It looks like a very high ceiling as a playmaker, and we had talked about this before, and I'm going to continue to say it. I will say it staunchly. Give me a better maybe LeBron and AD, but like, is there a better two-man game between Jamal Murray and Anthony and Nikola Jokic at this point? The two, how they play off one another, is absolutely unreal in terms of just the efficiency that they have, the ability to get an open shot. How many times do you see in a game, if they're struggling, they'll just go, oh, let's just do a dribble handoff with Murray, we'll get an open look mid-range. It's absolutely fantastic to watch these two play together. And what was even better was, after a loss like they suffered in game two, Mike Malone, after the game, and he said this, he was absolutely brilliant, he was right, because you lose the way you do in game two, right? Probably a game you should have won. Plumlee messes up, but he brought it up too in the post game. Like, look, we came in, we watched that play, we got it out of here, but we came out today and I knew we would have some fantastic energy to start game three.
I had no doubt, Sam, that we were going to show up tonight. And the reason I didn't have any doubt is because we won 6 straight elimination games. You know, everybody always has us packing our bags and leaving, but we're not ready to go. For some reason, we love this bubble. I can't explain that, but this team loves the bubble. And yesterday when we met and we watched the film, I started off by watching the last play of the game. You know, get the elephant in the room out of the way. Let's talk about this play, what happened. And when we're in this situation again, let's learn from it. Yes, we all take ownership. Let's learn from it. But after that, my goal was, when we got done with that film, they saw so many positive clips of us doing the right things, which put us in a position to win. And now we had to do that for more than just a second half. We had to do it for 4 quarters. And tonight we did it at a high level for 3 in the fourth quarter. Obviously, we'll work on our zone offense tomorrow and taking care of the basketball. But Very resilient group, and I think this group has proven that time and time again.
Yep, and we'll get to the zone defense again, which seems to be just all over the NBA at this point, considering what Miami's been trying to do to Boston, what the Lakers did to get back into this game when they were down 20 in the second half against the Denver Nuggets. By the way, a couple of things. Mike Malone, the reason people have you packing your bags every time is because you're facing elimination, like every single time. I think it's a little unfair. I don't know if he was trying to play the nobody believes in his card. You face 2-3-1 series deficits. I think you can calm down on that. But the other part of it is I don't think there's any doubt. We talk about coming out parties, right, and how Jamal Murray is now becoming in that upper echelon and superstar, all that stuff. Mike Malone's a damn good head coach, and he has proven this now with the Denver Nuggets and the adjustments that they've made throughout the series that they've come back in and what he's done with this team. And the Nuggets are extremely well built. But just Denver overall last night, look at this team effort, because Jamal Murray was great, but it wasn't just him. The Nuggets were efficient in every single area of the floor against the Lakers. They shot 73% at the rim, 73.9% to be specific, 17 to 23 within 4 feet. Mid-range shots, they were 12 to 21, 57.1%. Three-point shooting, 11 to 28, 39.3%. In the half court, their efficiency rating, 106.1. Fast break efficiency per play, 150. These numbers, man, like, they're really good. Now, I would say that everything we just listed off, right, again, as we talk about learning and moving forward, if we're talking about what happened last night, the numbers at the rim are probably going to regress, right? We're talking about a Lakers team that is the best rim protection team in the NBA just due to the size alone. You know, Denver's not going to shoot 74% at the rim against Los Angeles time and time again. But having said that, certain facets of their game don't seem to be slowing down. On the series now through three games, Denver's shooting 47.8% from the mid-range. They're a team that, if you remember, top 10 team in terms of mid-range frequency and mid-range shooting. So they're actually, the core of their offense is continuing to operate here against the Los Angeles Lakers, man. And there's the other side of this too, because now, of course, Denver probably kicking yourselves a little bit considering that you could be sitting on a 2-1 series lead. But let's look at the Lakers side of this, because what happened last night, I think, with the Los Angeles Lakers is kind of why it is why I had, like, the Clippers rated above them in the grand scheme of things when it came to rating the teams of, right, for the Western Conference and for the league overall, right? Because the inherent flaws with the Lakers roster kind of showed themselves last night, and it's going to happen from time to time. Like, I'm not punting on the Lakers. It's just what you saw last night with some of the issues with Los Angeles are going to be issues and were going to be issues that I thought were going to hold them back going forward in terms of a quest for a title, right? Their offensive efficiency. For the game, they posted an offensive rating of 109.3. Over the last two games, they're averaging just 108.8 points every 100 possessions. They shot just 23% from beyond the arc. That's going to happen from time to time, the way this roster is constructed, right? We've talked about this multiple times, that with the way that they have, like, their role players set up, guys like Alex Caruso, Kyle Kuzma, right, Rajon Rondo, these guys are not the most prolific jump shooters in the NBA. And so you're going to have games that they're going to struggle from distance, and not even just from three, but mid-range as well. But just look at their closing lineup last night, for example. This is what I talk about when I mean, like, the inherent flaws with the roster. LeBron, Davis, Kuzma, Caruso, Rondo. LeBron's the best shooter among those five at 34.8%, and that's their best closing lineup at this point. Kuzma, Caruso, both missed three-point shots in the final quarter, right? Like, this is what you're going to see with the Lakers from time to time. Now, a lot of the times, when you play defense at the level that they do, when you can run and transition the way that they do, right? You hear the cliche, defense turns into offense. How many times do we see that with the Los Angeles Lakers? Like, their offense is spurned by how well they play defensively, because you either get a block shot or a rebound, and immediately it's out in transition and getting a bucket that's relatively easy, or an open look for some subpar three-point shooters. But, like, this is what the Lakers are up to this point, and they're still extremely good. Like, I hope this is not misconstrued, but you're going to have these issues pop up from time to time with them. And just look at Kuzma and Caruso, a combined 1 of 7 from deep in this game. Danny Green, who is just not consistent and kind of awful at this point, 3 of 10 from beyond the arc. And we're talking about now Kuzma, Caruso, Green, three key role players going a combined 4 of 17 from 3-point range. This is going to happen from time to time with the Los Angeles Lakers. And yet, despite all of that, right, they slap on his own defense and they're able to get right back into it, because, of course, defense turns into offense. But let's hear from Frank Vogel, because first off, he talked about it, right? I think kind of energy is somewhat the theme here throughout this entire game, because Denver came out with really good energy. Malone even mentioned it. They got out to a lead. They didn't really look back for the most part. And Vogel kind of echoed the same thing, man. Like, Denver played with great energy. We didn't really match it.
Hey, Frank, what did you make of the gap in the rebounding? I suppose just the general energy and effort.
The gap in rebounding is more about field goal attempts. I mean, they had 5 more offensive rebounds than us, but, you know, we had 10 more shots than them, so there's going to be more rebounds to get. I thought Denver played with great energy throughout the game. We didn't match it early. We matched it late. But, you know, they're a great basketball team, so credit them for the win.
Now, he talked about matching the energy late, and part of the matching the energy late, it was actually twofold, right? One, Jamal Murray mentioned it post-game that I think once they built up this big lead, the Nuggets seemed to, as a team, somewhat coast down the stretch, thinking that they were going to get kind of get away with this and win this game and get up to a 2-1 series deficit. But the other part of this is, as we talked about, the Los Angeles Lakers and Frank Vogel deciding, yeah, you know what? Let's ruin the rhythm a little bit. Let's throw out this zone, and the zone helped them cut back into the deficit. Vogel, again, one more time, talked about slapping on the zone and why, indeed, they did do that.
Well, the activity, you know, I mean, that's what you, you know, as a coach, when your team gets down and, you know, you're looking for something to try to give your team a spark, you try to change the game. You know, sometimes it's a lineup, sometimes it's a coverage, you know, sometimes it's the zone defense. You know, thread it out there, just break their rhythm a little bit. It doesn't always work. It did tonight. And, you know, it's something we've talked about with our group, about playing some zone with this team to break their rhythm because they're so surgical offensively. And it worked down the stretch, but, you know, obviously the deficit was too much to overcome.
So in all of this put together, right, it leads to the Nuggets sitting in a 2-1 series hole. Potentially could have been sitting up 2-1 themselves over the Los Angeles Lakers. But this goes back to what I have talked about since the beginning of this series. We talked about it yesterday, did multiple hits here on the network, and I kind of reiterated the same message over and over again. Because the Nuggets last night closed as a 6.5-point underdog. In game one, they were a 7.5-point underdog. In game two, they were, you know, catching 7, 7.5, depending on where you look for your number, right? Game one, I played the Nuggets. Game two, I played the Nuggets. Game three, I played the Nuggets. And I've been stubborn in saying that this number, from a power rating perspective, has not been where it should be, right? And now we spin this forward because what have we learned through three games? And I think we have learned through three games that this Denver Nuggets team has been a little undervalued by the market. We're now talking about a Denver Nuggets team that is 12-5 against the spread in 17 postseason games, right? That's not, that's clearly, it's 17 games. It's a large enough sample size to tell us now that the market is still a little low on this Denver Nuggets team and that it needs to catch up here. And to tell you one more time again, as we have seen throughout the regular season, we were talking about point spreads of 2.5, 3, 3.5, 5.5 in the Orlando bubble seeding game between these two, right? We're talking about, again, single possession games. We have seen these teams now play, what is it now, 7 times, right? And of the 7 times that we have seen them play, 4 of them have been single possession games. Actually, no, sorry, 5 of them have been single possession games. Like, these are just tightly contested games up to this point. And now I think the market has to start to catch up with this here. And we're seeing the Nuggets. And with the initial number that I saw pop up last night, you know, I think Pinnacle opened 6. There were some other spots that opened 6.5. But the spots that opened 6.5 immediately went to 6. And this is now, we're starting to see this number approach, I think, where it should be. And it's funny because we have the conversation on this show all the time, right, with these neutral site series. And, hey, game one line should be the number, right, throughout the entire series. Unless the game one line's wrong. And I thought the game one line was wrong, and now we're starting to get to the point where maybe it should be where it is. And like I said, to me, the point where I'm out is when this gets to about 5. And until then, I'll be in. But where I'm more curious about this for game three is now it's sitting at 6, and I haven't bet this yet. But what the market does with this, and again, to open up 6.5 in a couple of spots, immediately go to 6, it gives you an idea of what's going to happen. And I do think that 6 is probably going to be the best number you get here. But if this is 6 again, I think we got a big enough sample size now that both in this series, specifically against the Los Angeles Lakers, and in the postseason, that this Denver Nuggets team has been underrated up to this point and that they're worth a play yet again, catching about 6. And if it gets to 6.5, catching 6.5 in game 4 against the Los Angeles Lakers. With that, we'll have more on the all of these, by the way, going forward. Oh, and I should also note, too, because last night I kind of I was on social media, and from an offensive standpoint, Paul Millsap has been total bunk and garbage and has been averaging about 5 points per game in the first 3 games of this series. But to give him credit, the reason why Paul Millsap, every time he touches the ball, it's an empty possession offensively, but he's still out there. It's because what he's done defensively has been absolutely unreal. How about this for Mark Spears of ESPN? He pulled this from ESPN Stats and Info. Lakers forward Anthony Davis against Paul Millsap in this series, 25% against Paul Millsap, 65% against all other Denver defenders. So if you're watching and you're wondering from an offensive standpoint, wow, Paul Millsap doesn't really offer anything from this standpoint offensively. Well, he's been playing very well defensively against a guy like Anthony Davis, and it's a reason why he's still out there. We should also note, too, because I love basketball narratives and, you know, calling guys soft, even though you would never call them soft to their face, because these guys would probably murder every single one of us. Anthony Davis last night, just 2 rebounds, huh? After a game in which he hits a game winner, looked pretty dominant down the stretch, scored, what did we talk about in game two, or game two, scored the last 10 points of that game for the Los Angeles Lakers, somewhere around there. And then he manages only 2 rebounds last night against the Denver Nuggets. This is going to be a good series, man. I think we've been pretty staunch in that this series going forward. You know, I thought the Lakers would win in six, but I thought all six games were going to be hell in terms of just fighting and clawing and scratching your way through. And through the first few games, we're seeing that that's going to be true. And I won't let you forget either. In game one, despite the fact that they lost by double digits, remember the Nuggets were up by 230 and dropped 38 points on the best defensive team in the NBA in the first quarter of that game one contest. So we'll have more on the NBA later in the show. Eastern Conference Finals, of course, resume later tonight. Has Boston figured out that zone defense? I gotta say, there's a few numbers that suggest they might, and it's not just because of Gordon Hayward, although his presence really did help. When we come back to the Stanley Cup Finals, we are on to game three, this one of course tied up. Let's talk a little bit about Dallas and their style of play, because it seems to be working against them. And are the Tampa Bay Lightning actually going to get healthier? Because there's a big name that's kind of just sitting there on the edge, maybe waiting to come back. We'll have all that and more here on the Edge. Make sure you're ready for the action. Sign up for First Bet, a new betting and handicapping product from ExpressBet. Use a promo code Vegas500. Get a $10 free bet as soon as you sign up, plus receive up to a $500 bonus for wagering in your first 30 days. Visit first.com/bet for more information. 1st.com/BET. Again, that's first.com/bet. Promo code Vegas500. It's the Edge here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel. As we roll on through, let's talk a little bit about the Stanley Cup Finals. Tampa Bay, of course, and Dallas, as we know now, series tied 1 game apiece. We're sitting on game three now. Tampa Bay, $1.50 favorite, plus 135 on the other side, 5 slightly shaded to the over, minus 125. Not a lot of movement here for the most part off the opening price. Circa on the board that I'm looking at right now with the lowest price on Tampa Bay, minus 148, plus 135 coming back here on Dallas. So I kind of alluded to this. I'm really curious how this plays out going forward. And I just wonder if Dallas and their physical style has kind of been working against them. It kind of did in game two when you think about it, right? Stars took the first 3 penalties of the game, led to 2 goals for a Lightning power play that has really struggled, by the way, in the postseason. Lightning power play only hitting at a 19% clip in the postseason up to this point, but they finally take advantage in game two, able to get back of the net twice off of a power play, also got in the first period goal from the blue line. But it seems that Dallas kind of, their physical style maybe works against them for the most part in certain aspects, right? Even look at it overall, Dallas shorthanded 79 times in their 20 playoff games. It's not including the round robin portion of this restart, by far more than any other team in the postseason. They took 3 penalties in the third period of game one as well, if you remember, but that game was out of hand. Tampa Bay didn't take advantage. So I think from this perspective, you know, again, special teams a very big part of the game, but it's inherently tied, it seems, to the way that Dallas plays. And so going forward, if Dallas continues to take these penalties for their style of play, this is going to be a problem, because this is the interesting part about it. In terms of 5-on-5, it seems that they're like on relatively even footing with the Tampa Bay Lightning. So if they're going to continue to take key penalties or penalties early like they did in game two, it's obviously going to work against them in that regard, because the ice opening up for Tampa Bay in these man advantage situations, of course, is not going to benefit Dallas whatsoever. You see the Stanley Cup odds to win this too. The series, that is, the respect for the Lightning in terms of the market and where they're at power rated wise, it's very clear. A 1-1 tie now in the series. Lightning are $1.95 favorite, Stars coming back at plus 170 over at BetRivers. Here's the other thing when we talk about Lightning, because they're clearly respected by the market, they also might be getting a pretty good guy back in Steven Stamkos, who is, quote, inching closer to return to the ice for Tampa Bay. He participated in morning skate prior to game two, obviously didn't play. All indications are that he is potentially coming back at some point this series, whenever that is. And if it happens, it's nothing's nothing set in stone here, but here's why it's relatively important. Look, a guy like Braden Point, who has been absolutely fantastic in this postseason, I don't know if he's fully healthy. He had that lower body injury in the Eastern Conference Finals. Nikita Kucherov took a massive hit into the boards the other night as well. He looked like he was moving a little slow after that. And any team that has reached this far, right, Dallas included, is going to be pretty banged up. But if you can get a guy the level and the caliber of a guy like Stamkos this late, this is going to be massive if indeed he does come back at some point and is relatively healthy to impact the game on the ice. And then I wonder, too, from a betting market standpoint, right, we mentioned the respect that the market has for the Tampa Bay Lightning in the series overall. But a price like the one at Circa kind of sticks out to you, right? Because everybody else about $1.50, $1.55. You can lay a cheaper price at $1.48 here. But I'm more curious where the market moves this because we haven't really seen like a massive move throughout these first two games of the series, right? Again, going back to, hey, neutralized setting, if the price is accurate, should it be moving from a game-to-game basis? This has been about $1, $1.55, depending on where you shop for these games on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Even, of course, after dropping game one, closing is about $1.55 favorite in game two. We're now looking at a similar $1.55 across the board, except for a couple of shops here for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And it seems like the market is relatively stubborn on moving off of this for the most part. And I think that's probably the right call here, is the Tampa Bay Lightning should be able to maintain this course, I think, against the Dallas Stars. But here's the thing. When you've seen Dallas play defensively and limiting shots like they did in the first game, it all just goes back to our opening point, right? And if they're able to, I don't want to say get away. I think that is absolutely the wrong phrase. But if they're able to play their style of hockey without getting penalized for it, it's going to go a long way for Dallas to maintain their positioning in this series as well. Hey, how confident are you in your betting on this weekend's football games? There's always room to improve your sports betting IQ. VSiN's here to help you bet smarter this weekend. Start your 7-day risk-free trial. Place your next bet with confidence. Sign up today. You'll get Point Spread Weekly, our digital betting guide, NFL power ratings, and consensus picks from our experts. 24/7 live video streaming with full replays of all VSiN shows. College football betting guide with previews, predictions, and betting strategies. Daily emails with best bets from all of our shows, hosts, and guests. Plus, you can always access our parlay calculator, prop bet search engine, pick tracker on VSiN.com. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to start your risk-free trial today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Actually, I don't even think we got to it today. To the National Football League when we return. The San Francisco 49ers. Actually, no, we got Aaron K. Dolan. What am I talking about? I got excited. EKD joins us next, reporter for PointsBet. As you know, sports are back. It's time to check out PointsBet for their faster, easier app, offering faster bets, withdrawals, and rewards. PointsBet offering tons of promotions bettors actually care about, like odds, parlay boosts, as well as cash out early options on selected games. Download the PointsBet app today. Start betting with 100% deposit match up to $250. Sign up with code VSIN250. Deposit $250 to get an extra $250 with bonus bets. It's VSIN250, $100 minimum deposit. You got to be in Indiana, New Jersey, or Iowa. Got to be over 21. Additional terms and conditions apply. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, wants help, 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-9 with it if you're in Indiana. PointsBet. Stay sharp. All right, let's head out to our weekly spot. Aaron K. Dolan, reporter over at PointsBet, gives us a few minutes every single Wednesday to go over how everything went over down at PointsBet. Aaron, it's good to talk to you. So let's start NFL Week 2 in the books. What was the best result for the clients in the book? How did it go for PointsBet overall?
Well, thanks for having me back on. It was a tough week for all operators, with 14 of the 15 favorites winning on Sunday. Then for Monday Night Football, after being heavy on the Saints all week, we started taking a lot of Raiders money, so that game proved to be a bad result for us, with up to 80% of the tickets on the favorites in New Orleans, yet roughly 60% of money wagered on the side backed the Raiders, thanks to heavy money coming in on Monday. So the best result for the book in NFL Week 2 was the Seahawks goal line stand and their 35-30 victory over the Pats. This game shifted what would have been a bad week to just so-so. Plus, the Kansas City Chiefs were somewhat surprisingly close in a 23-20 overtime victory against the Chargers. This was also a strong result for the book. As for our clients, Tom Brady's first victory as a Buccaneer topped the charts against the Panthers. The Packers were a close second with a consecutive blowout over an NFC North rival in the Detroit Lions. So operators already looking forward to Week 3, big matchup, especially in Monday Night Football with the Chiefs in Baltimore. So that's the game I'm looking for. forward to. Yeah,
I think everybody's looking forward to that. It was the AFC Championship game we deserved last year, but we did not get because the Titans ruined everything. All right, week two was also kind of a bleak week, right? We had a lot of injuries. So what are the adjustments on points bet and points bets end with all of these guys missing time in the next few weeks or for the rest of the year?
Yeah, so unfortunately, key players shelved for the season are likely to miss time. We have Saquon Barkley out for the year, torn ACL. Christian McCaffrey, 4 to 6 weeks, high ankle sprain. Drew Lock, 3 to 5 weeks, rotator cuff strain. Not to mention 49ers Nick Bosa, torn ACL, out for the season. Jimmy G, high ankle sprain. Raheem Mostert, sprained MCL and more. So I could keep going on, but in a week filled with unfortunate injuries, we saw some notable adjustments, specifically in the NFC West. So despite the 49ers losing multiple big names, like I just mentioned, they did beat the Jets. So regardless of their week two win, though, we saw an adjustment from plus 190 to plus 275 to win the division. This is in large part due to the reigning defensive rookie of the year, Nick Bosa, reportedly out for the season. Elsewhere in the NFC West, we're seeing the Seahawks odds shift slightly from plus 190 to plus 175 after their week two win over Cam Newton and the Pats. They sit currently as the NFC West division favorites. Similarly, the Rams saw a slight move from plus 325 to plus 300 after they beat my Eagles on the road. It was a tough loss for me this weekend.
Yeah. I was very disappointed. I bet on them. It was a good comeback spot. I got them at plus one. I thought that they would actually bounce back. That defense is really bad. Like, that was the most surprising part about it.
It's really bad. And I honestly took the Rams in that. I knew that was going to happen.
Well, you know, people love the big bet stuff, right? They eat it up. So tell us about any notable bets over there at Points Bet in the market. And for those who really don't know, explain what points betting is for you guys as well.
Yeah, so points betting, what is it? A lot of people might get confused. So instead of betting on the fixed markets, with points betting, you multiply your stakes by points. So the more you're right, the more you win, and of course, vice versa. So two good examples of this for NFL Week 2. One bettor had $7 on the under for Derrick Henry rushing yards multiplied by touchdowns. The under was set at 162. Henry finished with 84 yards and zero touchdowns. As a result, the client won 162 times their stake. So you got that number by subtraction. Subtracting 84 yards from the under, which was set at 162. That $7 bet paid out $1,134. Another great example, one client wagered $150 per point on Baltimore at -8.5 over Houston. The Ravens beat the Texans by 17 points. Therefore, you take the 17 points and subtract the Ravens' 8.5 spread, resulting in 8.5 times your stake of $150. So that bettor won $1,275 off that bet. Again, with points betting, the more you write, the more you win. This is exclusive to Points Bet.
Yep, and make sure you go check it out. VSiN 250 is the promo code when you go sign up. All right, let's get you out of here on this. Let's switch gears. NBA Conference Finals, of course. We will get the Eastern Conference Finals resuming later tonight. Stanley Cup playoffs continue as well. Points Bet, where are they seeing the action for both the NBA and the NHL?
Well, let's start off in the Western Conference. Lakers Nuggets, great game last night. Before tip-off, Lakers had a two-game lead in the series. Nuggets pulled off a Game 3 win. Lakers are still favored to win the NBA title at -304, but that moved to -250 after last night's loss, while the Nuggets moved from 40-1 to 16-1 to win the NBA title. As for series winner prices, LA was -10,000, then shifted to -2,000 to win the series after last night's loss. Meanwhile, the Nuggets went from +2,000 to +900. Moving now to the Eastern Conference Finals. We have Heat, Celtics, Miami holding a two-game lead. We have Game 4 tonight. The Celtics are favored -3, total set at 210.5. Seeing already 75% of the handle on the over there. Also seeing 61% of the bet count and 81% of the handle on the Celtics to cover. As for series winner prices, Heat -143, Celtics +115. And to win the NBA title, we have the Heat +550 behind the Lakers, Celtics +600. Moving on to the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. I love this series. It is tied already Game 3 tonight. Lightning coming in as the underdog of +170. Right now we're seeing 60% of the bet count and handle on the Tampa Bay money line. And series last game, Lightning got 3 goals in the first period. Dallas Stars came back but just couldn't get it done. So
all right. I think, unfortunately, technology is a little fickle. So Erin Kate Dolan, you can follow her up on Twitter at Erin Kate Dolan. She's with us every single Wednesday. Make sure, of course, you go check out what PointsBet has to offer as well. But Erin does a great job covering everything that PointsBet has out there. So go ahead, check it out. VSIN 250 is the promo code. VSIN 250, $100 minimum deposit. Remember, you got to be in Indiana, New Jersey, or Iowa. You also have to be over 21 to enjoy everything that PointsBet has to offer. So big thank you to Erin Kate Dolan as she's with us every single week. Since we have a minute left, we should cover this really quickly because Maybe we'll do it in the second hour with Eric Edholm, but we do have some injury updates, and we do have some news coming out of the National Football League that apparently the surprise loss of Tyrod Taylor before the game on Sunday, well, that was due to a Chargers team doctor accidentally puncturing quarterback Tyrod Taylor's lung just before kickoff while trying to administer a pain-killing injection to his cracked ribs. So it does look like, at least for one more week, reading between the lines for some of the reports, that Justin Herbert will be the guy again for this coming weekend for the Los Angeles Chargers. But a self-inflicted wound here for the Los Angeles Chargers, literally, as Tyrod Taylor is missing time because of a punctured lung suffered by the hands of the team doctor, according to Adam Schefter. All right, when we come back, speaking of injuries, because that's going to be the theme here this week, right, the San Francisco 49ers. Not only do we have updates on all the guys, we do have a question mark about Jimmy Garoppolo coming up this weekend. That defensive front, man, Solomon Thomas, he's done. Nick Bosa, he's done. But there's more names popping up now for the San Francisco 49ers. That defensive line went from an absolute strength to a potential weakness in the span of about 24 hours. We'll give you the update on the latest name that's ailing for the San Francisco 49ers and some details on their matchup with the New York Giants. Sportsbook gets you ready for the Eastern Conference Finals Game 4 in the final stretch of the baseball regular season. Bet on all of today's big games and, as always, get a $250 match bonus on your first deposit, one-time playthrough, and all bonuses and superb customer service at Bet Rivers, your hometown sportsbook. Got to be 21, playable in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. If you have a gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER is the number in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Colorado, 1-800-522-4700, playable in New Jersey as Play Sugar House. One of the best quotes I have seen of the National Football League season. How about this? We're going to get to the San Francisco 49ers shortly. Bruce Arians asked about Rob Gronkowski's lack of targets, lack of catches, receptions, whatever, lack of action. Quote, "We haven't had that many red zone opportunities, and I don't see him running 40 yards past people anymore. We brought him in to play tight end. If that means no catches, it means no catches." End quote. Very good. Don't give in, Bruce. Don't give in. These guys come in and want to run your franchise. Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, let's go. It's your team. Anyway, San Francisco 49ers. So let's update this situation here for San Francisco, who is, again, on the road, taking on the New York Giants. They are staying at the Greenbrier, so they're still along the East Coast. They're not coming all the way back and then going back over. I know there is some confusion about that, but they are still on the East Coast. There was actually the story yesterday that the MRI truck that went to go examine Solomon Thomas and, of course, Nick Bosa actually got into a wreck or broke down, and so the truck was actually delayed over at the Greenbrier, so just bad luck all around for the San Francisco 49ers. This number initially on the look-ahead, San Francisco minus 6.5 with a total of 41. 1.5. Now we're looking at San Francisco minus 4.5 with a total of 41.5. So let's update the injuries first off with San Francisco, because you can't start anywhere but there. Jimmy Garoppolo, ankle. Now it's being diagnosed apparently as a high ankle sprain. Kyle Shanahan told the media Monday that the severity of the injury is, quote, not too bad, and that the door is open for a Sunday start. So there is a possibility that Jimmy Garoppolo could play here for the San Francisco 49ers going forward on Sunday. Now, of course, Nick Mullins is the guy ready to go if he cannot play. And my initial thought here is that of all the systems that we have seen up to this point, the San Francisco 49ers on a like 1-2 game basis can get away with a guy like Nick Mullins as their starting quarterback. Obviously, I don't think you want him for a season long stretch, but I think over a 1-2 game sample size, especially against a team like the New York Giants, it's something you can get away from. Now, you saw the list of injuries there too, by the way, to go over a couple of more. Raheem Mostert, knee issue, he is doubtful. Jerick McKinnon, Jeff Wilson, San Francisco's top options at running back. Tevin Coleman, he has already been ruled out for multiple weeks with his own knee injury up to this point. Coleman being diagnosed with a sprain, Raheem Mostert, MCL sprain. So both guys ailing with knee injuries. Mostert, though, with the window slightly open, but it seems very doubtful that he's going to be able to play. So Jerick McKinnon, Jeff Wilson, also Jamichael Hasty could make an appearance off of their practice squad. So the backfield could be extremely thin. The other interesting part about this is we look at George Kittle too, right? Because Kittle's questionable to play. He joined the team in Greenbrier, or he's expected to join the team in Greenbrier today, but we'll still see if he's going to play on Sunday. But it's unclear what they're going to use them. And here's the other thing, right? Because we had this storyline coming out of the weekend that the 49ers were not happy with the turf over at MetLife. The NFL is actually investigating what the turf is and if there was an actual problem, if it was sticking to the 49ers accusations there. But if you're the 49ers and there is a thought that maybe since you're at MetLife one more time, do you hold out guys like George Kittle because you don't want to risk him because he is dealing with his own knee issue and you don't want to risk him going out there and playing on a turf that you feel is unsuitable to play? Do you hold him out for one more week because you don't want to risk injury to one of the few skill position players that you have right now at this point? So I'm really curious to see what Kittle's status is going to be come this weekend. Already being reported as well that if he does play this weekend, he is more than likely going to be on a pitch count. So keep that in mind as well, that even if you do get George Kittle and Jimmy Garoppolo both back, George Kittle could be on a pitch count coming up this weekend, according to multiple reports. As for the defense, Jason Verrett, hamstring issue, their starting corner alongside Richard Sherman. We have yet to see him this year. No real indication as to whether or not he is going to make an appearance this weekend. And then you get to the defensive line, which has just been massacred in terms of injuries. So we know about Nick Bosa. We know about Solomon Thomas. Two troubling things coming out of this week. One, Dee Ford, who missed their matchup last weekend against the New York Jets, who was ruled out in that one, initially thought to have a neck issue, is now being reported as not only having a back issue, but having a back issue that's going to keep him out for a very long time. And there's even some speculation that Dee Ford should potentially be considering retirement, which is how serious this back issue could be for him. So going forward, it looks like they're not going to have Dee Ford for the foreseeable future. So we're talking about Nick Bosa, Solomon Thomas, and Dee Ford all not playing. Remember, you got rid of DeForest Buckner in the offseason as well. This is an defensive line that has gone from the best position group, right, or at least the best group at that position last year, to an extremely thin group. Now Ezekiel Ansah is reportedly coming in to play for the San Francisco 49ers, so they could add a former first-round pick there. Ansah reportedly adding 20 pounds in terms of muscle mass, so he could be ready to go here very shortly. But this is seemingly a dire situation for this defensive front. Oh, and by the way, it seems relatively positive that he's going to play, but DJ Jones is dealing with an ankle issue. It sounds like they're going to get ready to go and he's going to play, but he is still popping up in some reports that there is an ankle issue to be worried out here for DJ Jones. So this is, we're talking about, like, let's say Jones plays. Starting defensive tackles are Jones. Javon Kinlaw is a rookie. Kinlaw, 82 snaps, is not graded insanely well against the run. PFF has him at a 56.2 against the run, actually identical to what Jones has put out there up to this point this season. So maybe you can be had here on the ground. But here's the flip side. As we know, right, we talk about establishing a running game here against the San Francisco 49ers, who are extremely banged up. Oh, the New York Giants lost Saquon Barkley for the season to his own ACL injury. Deion Lewis, Wayne Gallman, expected to split time in the backfield. Devontae Freeman visited the team yesterday, expected to sign soon with, of course, a negative test in terms of the coronavirus. Keep in mind, too, Sterling Shepard is doubtful for the New York Giants as well. He's got turf toe that's expected to keep him out for multiple weeks. So this is another New York Giants, like this Giants team, it like seems on the surface that this is an opportunity for Daniel Jones and the Giants to do something here, and yet they're banged up at their own key positions like wide receiver and running back. And also keep in mind, Golden Tate, even though he played last week, was on the injury report for a hamstring issue. Darius Slayton has appeared on the injury report as well. So this is a wide receiver room that could just be ailing as well and not fully healthy yet, even though some of these guys are playing. So all of this put together, I don't think I would want any part of this game, even if I know that Jimmy Garoppolo and George Kittle are going to play, because one, Kittle could be on that pitch count, and two, it looked like Jimmy Garoppolo could barely walk around on that boot during that game. What's going to happen going forward? If he's not fully healthy, you put him out there. I just don't know what's going to happen in that regard. And he's missing. Even if he gets Kittle back, the skill positions are just devastated up to this point. So this is going to be a stay away, but there is a lot to update there in terms of the injuries for the San Francisco 49ers and the New York Giants. I'd keep an eye on that from a fantasy perspective. A running back for the New York Giants worth a play, considering how devastated that front seven is for the San Francisco 49ers. Moving on, Tennessee, Minnesota. This opened up pick. Total 45.5. Now we're looking at Tennessee in the range of about a 2.5-point favorite, depending on where you look for your numbers. At the last look for myself, it's 2.5 here at the South Point Hotel and Casino. We're looking at Yeah, 2.5 widely available with a total of 48.5. So this number has gone up. But look, there's two things we should know here, right? Again, injuries front and center. Nothing for the Titans in terms of notable injuries. Minnesota Vikings, we know that Anthony Barr has been ruled out for the rest of the season, torn pectoral. Not like Jacobs' torn pecs where he's just getting shredded in the gym. It's actually a legitimate torn pec that is going to keep him out for 16 weeks. I like that. Huh? That was a good one. Danielle Hunter, of course, neck issue. He's still on injured reserve. He is going to be out now. Again, for one more week, the injured reserve, he can miss three games, come back. So we'll see if Danielle Hunter is going to be back after this week. But look, Minnesota is not in a good place defensively. The Vikings ranked 20th in defensive DVOA through 2 weeks, according to Football Outsiders. They're allowing 6.1 yards per play, 44.7 yards per drive, 3.5 points per drive through these two games. Even worse, because you're taking on a Tennessee Titans team that I would assume would want to run the ball here, you're giving up 4.3 yards per carry and over 150 yards per game on the ground. And on the other side of this, and this is a mistake on my end for the most part, because I was right about saying going into the season that I don't trust this defense considering all of the rebuild that's going on here and the fact that they're missing guys and opt out of your key free agent addition, you know, Hunter being hurt. Now Anthony Barr, of course, on top of that, so he's not going to play. The other side of this, of course, which I think we on the show, and just me because I'm responsible for that, undercovered is the fact that, sorry, Adam Thielen's not better than Stephon Diggs. And this offense has really struggled without the presence of Diggs in that wide receiving room. We saw it against the Indianapolis Colts where they generated next to nothing from an offensive push. And Kirk Cousins has not been good, obviously, throwing the two interceptions, and he threw three total, but one of them was on a Hail Mary. That offense did nothing against the Indianapolis Colts, a same Indianapolis Colts team that the week prior allowed Gardner Minshew to go 19 of 20 through the air and score 27 points in a win. This offense is in a really bad place. This defense is in a really bad place. But all of that being said, for some reason, this number's not getting to three with the Tennessee Titans. And I wonder what that means and what that tells you. I'm not going to be in anywhere near this game as well. But there's a lot of key injury question marks going forward on what we're seeing here. Last but not least, Cincinnati, Philadelphia. We kind of alluded to some of the issues with Aaron Kate Dolan of the Philadelphia Eagles here going forward. But to reiterate, what's been happening with Philadelphia? It's really surprising. And by the way, Eagles opened up 5.5 with a total of 46.5. Now you're looking right now at a spread of 6 with a total of 46.5. But what was so surprising to me, right, and we could talk about the offensive line issues and how bad this offense has looked through two games. Carson Wentz, by the way, near the bottom of the league in terms of turnover-worthy plays. He has not been good through two games either. You look at just that game against the Los Angeles Rams in terms of fitting balls into spaces where they should not be, and just tight windows overall, really, really just high, we'll call it turnover-worthy plays, but high-risk throws for Carson Wentz in that game against the Los Angeles Rams that didn't need to be had when Miles Sanders was averaging well over 4 yards per carry and the offensive line was doing what they needed to do from a run game perspective. But overall, what was so worrisome to me was the fact that this defense was not good against the Los Angeles Rams. You look at this overall, Rams came out averaged 6.7 yards per play, 4.9 yards per rush, which allowed them to operate their offense. They operated highly in terms of third down efficiency. They were 7 of 12. They were 1 for 1 on fourth down. It was just not a good game for the Philadelphia Eagles overall defensively. And that's the worrisome part about it. Kind of expected going forward, right, after week one. All right, if the offense has its issues, we can kind of understand that. But defensively, to just get torn up on the ground the way the Los Angeles Rams did is troublesome going forward here against the Cincinnati Bengals team that doesn't have the same running game. So this is going to be a good litmus test for the Eagles, but the market at least thinks we'll bet this up a half point to 6 right now. All right, second hour of the program on the way. Eric Edholm's going to join us, NFL writer for Yahoo Sports. We're going to open up with the AFC East because there's some fascinating teams here like the Buffalo Bills. This new look, Josh Allen. Is this something that's going to be here to stay for Buffalo? Because this offense all of a sudden looks really good, and he's putting up numbers similar to Peyton Manning?